Members, we're going to unofficially call the meeting to order. We still need a couple of more members in order to have a quorum, but we like to get started closer to being on time. And I'll remind everyone again later, but please try to get here at the appointed hour if you could, so we can get on with our business. We have a presentation, first of all, from Military Affairs on their bonding proposals. And members, if you would pull out from your file, remember we asked you to save your score sheet on all of the proposals so that you can add the comments to it from what you hear today. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and I have with me today Colonel Bruce Jensen, and we're going to give you a short presentation on our capital bonding request. This is the agenda that we'll follow.
Okay. You may proceed.
All right. Colonel Jensen.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Colonel Bruce Jensen, the Construction Facilities Management Officer for the Army National Guard. As you see before you, a number of items we'll cover with you in the briefing today, mainly focused on our capital budget request, not only the facility sustainment portion, but also the state educational complex. Mr. Chair, just to cover the capital goals and objectives that we have within the Department of Military Affairs, you'll see a number of items here. I just want to touch on the three main pieces with that. Our strategy right now is to replace or upgrade our major building components before they fail. With that, we have an aggressive plan to try and conduct the major sustainment projects within our fleet to buildings before we have issues with failing roofs and heat system, those types of things. Along with that, there's a number of things that we do in our facilities when we upgrade them from the health and safety standards. Mainly that's sprinkler systems and those types of things from a fire perspective, and also American Disabilities Act compliance issues. And then lastly, the piece that we have up there is investing in the infrastructure of Camp Ripley. Camp Ripley is our primary training area that allows us the opportunity to do live fire and a number of things that prepare soldiers for war, but is also used by a number of state agencies for their training. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the educational complex. Next slide. I spoke about upgrading and replacing our major building components. Generally, how we accomplish major sustainment projects within Department of Military Affairs is doing by what we call batch projects. And these are tied to major component systems when they reach the end of their useful life, be it HVAC systems, mechanical systems, building, envelope, or roof. So when we do a batch project in our armories, that essentially shuts that building down for, in some cases, up to a year. But that minimizes the impact on the soldiers rather than pulling them out of their facility a number of times over a few years to fix each one of those pieces as they come up. Generally, what we're looking at is about every 25 years we should be doing a major batch project in our facilities. As you'll see in our request, we've got five armories that are targeted, at least in this biennium, that we're looking at potential batch projects. This slide just gives you an idea of some of the recent batches that we've done, and then also shows you the five that we're proposing in this biennium. Of note, in FY 10-11, we've got Jackson and Duluth. Both of those are currently in design and will be bid within the next 60 to 90 days. And then we've got the last five, which we'll touch on a little bit more specifically. Overview of what our budget request is. 5.5 in asset preservation. That's really the major workhorse on the state side that we use to do long-term capital improvements. And in many cases, that's matched with federal funds one for one. And then also at 19.5, we've got the Camp Ripley Education Center addition, and we'll look at that more in subsequent slides. Asset pres, as I just mentioned, that's our major portion on the state side to do capital improvements. This just gives you an idea of some of the major items that we do when we go in and do badge projects. Envelope protection, mechanical systems, roofs. We've also got the life safety and ADA compliance issues through there. And depending on where the budget is, we do make some modifications to the interior of the building and upgrade the office space and those types of things. But the major purpose behind this is to keep the facility up and running. We've got a number of facilities across the state that are about 17 or 18% of our facilities are actually closer in age to the Civil War than they are to today. So we're trying to maintain an aging fleet of buildings. Slide.
Excuse me, Colonel members, we now do have a quorum, so we'll officially call the meeting to order. You may proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this slide goes more into detail of the projects that we're looking at that went into our bonding process. As we move down the road with this, we've drafted the request for proposal. Right now, these numbers are based off historical square footage costs for similar type projects. As you can see, it varies a little bit, but that depends on what exactly we have to do in the building. For example, Roseville is a little bit higher square foot cost, but that's because we're totally replacing the mechanical system within the building. But as you can see, Cottage Grove, Roseville, Austin, Chisholm, and Pipestone are at least on our schedule for this biennium to conduct the maintenance in. Slide. The next item that we have is the Camp Ripley Educational Complex. In a nutshell, that provides for three major components to be added onto the current education system, which will provide additional classroom space, billeting or lodging facility, and then also a consolidated dining facility for Camp Ripley. Fine. Main takeaway from this slide, this addition would facilitate the additional classroom space for about 200 personnel to use throughout the year. We also are planning on 40 additional rooms to be used for billeting. And then the dining facility, as you can see, is about a 400-person facility. The current facility we have can feed 120 people at a time, and as you start to cycle that number of people through, you're starting noon meal probably at 10:30 or 11 o'clock in the morning and cycling through for to 1:30. So this would give us the facility to get, or the opportunity to get people in, get them fed, and get them back to the training that they have scheduled. This provides just an aerial view of the cantonment area. You can see where the proposed complex is. It's directly adjacent to the Emergency Management Training Center, which is nearing completion right now on post. We believe that'll be done, and I believe we're looking at grand opening in the April time frame. The educational complex is not only going to facilitate soldiers, but we have a large state interagency population that uses Camp Ripley, and this would also provide for the facilities that they require when they do their training between Department of Transportation, Natural Resources, Public Safety. A number of local police departments also use Camp Ripley on a routine basis to train. Again, you can see it's adjacent to the Emergency Management Training Center, and also it's connected right on to the education center now. Just to answer some questions, right now this addition typically on the federal side would be 100% federally funded. We're asking for this primarily because of the nexus that it has with interagency use, and as you can see on the slide, if we were to try and go down the road to get this need filled on the federal side right now, the earliest we'd probably be looking at getting that funding would be 2018. Draw your attention to the 34th Infantry Division, which just came out on the Future Years Defense Plan. We started that project in the process of getting that on the FYDEP back in 2004, so you can kind of get an idea of the time it takes to get projects through on the federal side. The other piece of that is our projects at the national level not only compete with other states in their national guards, but it also competes at the Department of the Army level. And right now the focus is on operational requirements at the DA level. So in this case, this would be viewed more of an institutional type project. So we have a need to do this today, and that's one of the reasons that we're asking for the money through the state side. The other piece on this slide, because it meets a federal requirement, we would pick it up in our inventory to be federally supported for sustainment. So the long-term capital improvements and those types of things would be borne by the federal government. Mr. Chair, that completes our briefing subject to your questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, it says in the project here that you need $2 million, or was that already been given for the design of the project, the $1.83 million, or is that still necessary?
Colonel Jensen?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that has already been bonded, and we're in the process of selecting the designer for that, so the $1.83 has already been funded.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wondering the education center, does that include the museum? I visited the Civil War display in the museum that you had there this summer, and it's a pretty small building. Is that included in this?
Colonel Jensen?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, it does not. This includes a classroom, a dining facility, and the lodging. The museum, depending on meetings that they would have, may use this facility, but is not targeted or oriented towards the museum.
Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd just like to commend you. And I noticed in 2008 that you did some work in the Armory in Hutchinson. And I just want to say that Hutchinson is a very fine town that became even more important yesterday. So I'm glad to see that, that you're helping them out.
Excuse me.
Let me keep going.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Kerr and Colonel Jensen. Appreciate your being here and your presentation this morning. Thank you. Members, again, I want to remind you that in your save folder, you ought to have this score sheet. And while things are fresh, I hope you will please mark it up in the final, the right-hand column. We've asking you to indicate your support, or whether you support or do not support the request, or if you have not, if you want to take a pass on it, whichever the case might be. When we're finished with all the bonding requests, we will tally this from all of you and forward it to the Capital Investment Committee, so they will see how our committee ranks and rates all of the different proposals. And we're going to have probably a couple more proposals or presentations as we go forward. We're waiting to hear back from some other agencies or departments. So with that, member, we'll move on with the agenda, and let's first of all take care of the minutes, since we do now have a quorum.
Mr. Chairman, I would move approval of the minutes.
Representative Murray moves the minutes from our February 21st meeting. Any additions or corrections? Seeing or hearing none, all in favor of those minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The minutes are approved. The next item on the agenda is House File 2170, Representative Lemire. welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Executive Director Don Kerr and Colonel Bruce Jensen just described the project, if someone could move my bill to move the capital investments.
I will move House File 2170, and our intent is to lay these over for our scoring, and then we will be passing our scoring on to the Capital Investment Committee. So you may proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2170 is...
You're going to take that chair all the way up front.
House File 2170 is an appropriation of $19.5 million to the Department of Military Affairs to construct approximately a 49,000 square foot educational facility at Camp Ripley. This does have statewide significance because they do use that facility to teach our troopers, DNR personnel, Department of Transportation, as well as the soldiers. I will be open to any questions that you may have, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Questions for Representative O'Meara? Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative O'Meara, is there money from the federal government attached with this, or is it just asking? Is there a compliment? You asked for this amount, and the feds will come in and match it, or are they? Is this a project that hasn't reached the feds' guideline?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, no, I don't believe the federal government will be participating in this project because, like I said, using the facility to teach the troopers and the DNR personnel and Department of Transportation personnel. And if I could, I'd like Executive Director Don Kerr to add to that, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, this project was not originally sought as a federal project from the Department of Military Affairs because it would have been difficult to get prioritized through the Army system. If we move forward with that at this time, the earliest we could expect to get this project from the federal government would be in the 2018 to 2021 time frame. And we really felt as an agency that it was a need that's growing at Camp Ripley with the completion of the Department of Public Safety Emergency Management Training Facility at Camp Ripley, getting a lot of interest from interagency partners to make more utilization of Camp Ripley. And this is one of the real needs that we have in billeting and feeding to the standard that they prefer, our interagency partners. And that's why we've chosen to ask for this through the state system at this time.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, how many interagency or how many other departments, you said public safety uses this here, how often would this be used on a regular basis? And do you require a fee from these other agencies to use it? Do they have some buy-in on this whole thing, or is it just strictly for Veterans of Military Affairs, I should say?
Mr. Kurt?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, very many agencies use Camp Ripley. For example, the State Patrol actually has their academy up there, and they use the Education Center. The Department of Natural Resources and the State Patrol use our lodging. In fact, they're in stiff competition for first access to our lodging, to our upgraded lodging. It's quite interesting to see how that goes down. There's a lot of politicking that goes on between the senior members of those agencies to try to get preferential treatment in the best building. And this would help alleviate some of that gap in need. We also have a lot of usage from the Department of Transportation during the snowplow driver's training period. Every snowplow driver that works for DOT goes to Camp Ripley and spends a week or two up there saving the lives of innocent mailboxes throughout the state by first having those incidents at Camp Ripley in an unpopulated area. And we think it's a very useful thing. Multiple agencies do use the facility frequently, and we'll try to get some information. I know that Colonel Scott St. Sauver, the camp commander, and his deputy have very good data and information about what the interagency usage is. But in addition to state agencies, we also have a lot of use from police forces throughout the state, SWAT teams, bomb squads, immediate reaction forces, like to use the facilities at Camp Ripley. Often they'll go up and spend two or three days there to be able to go through all of the weapons training that they need to do. And so there's really quite a bit of interagency use, not only of state government, but also of local government entities that really don't have very much money in their budgets to support training. And by doing it at Camp Ripley, they can do it a little bit cheaper than if they have to stay in Little Falls. Although that's...
Representative Matters.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kerr, there is some type of a fee required from the agencies or from people that want to use it. They're required to have some type of a buy-in into being able to use the facilities.
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, yes, sir, they do charge a fee for the billeting. It generally is quite a bit below the going rate in the economy. And, of course, the dining facility is really a convenience factor. It saves travel time in and out of town for the agencies. Depending on what facility they're using, there may or may not be a fee. There is a fee structure for the lease of the facilities, and we do have longstanding leases with the Department of Natural Resources and with the Department of Public Safety for the Highway Patrol Academy. So there is a fee that goes, it's money that moves between the agencies to support that. But it's not a substantial amount of money, much more efficient than trying to get the same services on the commercial market.
Representative Anderson.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kurt, you would say that this facility would be used 52 weeks out of the year?
Mr. Kerr?
Yes, sir. We use the Education Center for interagency use 52 weeks a year right now, and we believe that will continue. Maximum, I'm not sure. Well, Jensen, do you have occupancy data?
No.
Or not?
It's almost the same. I get a few
Mr. Chair,
please come to the microphone, Colonel.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I do not have the exact usage data. That's something we will need to provide to the committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Anderson. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lemire, I think I heard the Colonel say that the upkeep, the long-term sustainment costs and asset preservation would be paid for by the federal government. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lemire.
Yes, that's correct. The upkeep capital improvements will be by the federal government.
Once it's built,
yes.
Okay. And Representative Lemire, my second question is, can this be phased at all, or does the money all have to be in this bonding bill?
Representative Lemire.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, if I could defer that to Mr. Kerr.
Sure.
To answer the question.
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, it is certainly not the agency's preference that it be phased, because our experience with phasing these types of projects is that you do incur some additional expenses by having to close envelopes and then reopen them and redo work that you had to do in the first phase. But certainly that we wouldn't rule that out.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, it's always the first number is always the best number for people that are submitting. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gotten here. But it seemed like there were such different functions taking place in this center, right? Sleeping, feeding, educating, all three. So they're not all going to be done in the same rooms or the same wing or whatever. Am I correct?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, you would be correct. I would, you know, without knowing what we planned, because we'd have to design it that way, and it wouldn't be too late to do that, but I would expect exactly what you're talking about would be a problem. If we phase it, I would expect we'd have to phase the building in one cycle and the dining facility in another cycle and the education classroom additions in another cycle, and that would create problems during the period that we're doing the construction. Absolutely.
Representative Murphy. Chair, Mr. Curran, of those three different uses, which is the most important?
Mr. Kerr?
I'll defer to Colonel Jensen, Mr. Chair.
Colonel Jensen?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the priorities of the three, first would be the dining facility, followed by the classroom, and then finally the building.
Thank you.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might have been covered, so I want to defer to you. I'm trying to get a sense of, is Camp Ripley being used more today than it has in the past? And what's driving the increase, if in fact there is? I'm trying to get a sense for that, and maybe Mr. Kirk can answer that. I don't know if it was covered, but just briefly, are we marketing this more to various different agencies so we're seeing greater usage? I'm trying to get a sense of that, please.
Let Mr. Kerr respond.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidiger, yes, Camp Ripley is being used quite a bit more, and we will provide that usage data to the committee. Obviously, we'll take that as a walkway, but what we're finding is that as we improve the military capabilities at Camp Ripley, there are often corresponding benefits that are available to other agencies. Some that have to do with military-type activities, for example, our range facilities, our weapons simulator facilities can provide feedback that you can't get on the range, that our police officers and law enforcement officers find very beneficial and very high value. In addition to that, as we're building recently completed our Combined Arms Collective Training Facility, the CACTAP, at Camp Ripley. That is basically a small village, or actually multiple small villages that are connected, that are designed to give the ability to do certain types of training for our military forces that relate to their duties in Afghanistan and Iraq and other venues around the world, but also are useful for police SWAT teams to look at, okay, here's a mock-up of a city with a school. How do we do an active shooter scenario here? And they're able to do that in a very controlled environment with a high degree of feedback by using the systems that were put there to support military training. And in addition to that, just the conference space, the ability to do after-action reviews of their training, they're finding very beneficial. And I think that we have been doing a little bit more marketing to those types of audiences to showcase Camp Ripley to them and get the utilization of the resource that we feel is our duty to do by statute. And so, yes, the utilization is up quite a bit substantially, both militarily and on the civilian side. And we'll provide that data to the committee at some future day.
Representative Leidiger, members, could we please have some decorum here for the presentation?
Okay, so one of the concerns I'd have is ensuring, well, we're going to have that continued usage or that continued increase of usage. I mean, thanks for talking about various capabilities. Now, we're talking about, at the federal level, a reduction in forces. I do worry about, and I don't know whether Camp Ripley could ever be subject to the BRAC environment. I don't even know how the federal government's doing that anymore. Because certainly we don't want to invest and then have it closed. So can you talk to that just briefly, please?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidiger, Camp Ripley would not be subject to the BRAC because it is a state-owned facility. It's not a federal facility. We could see a reduction in federal funding potentially. That is a possibility. But I would tell you the indicators are going the other way. Camp Ripley was recently identified as a regional training center and identified that way by the National Guard Bureau to focus additional federal resources at the installation. And so what I think we're seeing right now is something of a snowball effect, that the more we build, the more relevant we become, and the easier it is to find new sources of training value. And for example, what the legislature did by funding the Department of Public Safety Emergency Management Training Facility, which is, as Colonel Jensen mentioned, is about to open, that's really provided some interesting opportunities where the Department of HSEM can bring in county-level emergency managers and give them realistic training that they can tie to a simulated situation in the Combined Arms Collective Training Facility where you've got emergency responders actually on the ground in a simulated tornado event, and the emergency responders have the ability to respond. They're given training and evaluation in their ability to respond, and they're able to refine their techniques, and that's something that's well beyond the scope of what the feds ever envisioned when we built the CACTAF, but it's a great creative use of the available resources, and it's something that we think is very important to the people of Minnesota to continue to foster that.
Thank you. That's exactly the kind of information I wanted to know. Thanks.
Any further questions? Representative Vander.
Thank you. Mr. Chair,
Mr. Kerr, you just mentioned something about civilian usage of that. I'm just wondering from the standpoint of Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Civil Air Patrol, Lions, or any, can you accommodate these groups along with the state activities that go on from public safety and others? That would, could they be in a combination, or is it, how is that scheduled?
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, in fact, we do indeed support those types of agencies. Last year, we had 5,000 Boy Scouts on Camp Ripley for Regional Jamboree. That's a recurring event that we have every couple of years that, that we are the large regional jamboree. So we have community activities and other agencies using Camp Ripley all the time, and it really is available for the public to use. Despite the fact that there's a big stone gate there and people will check your ID when you come in, it is an open post, and we encourage the citizens of Minnesota to come visit Camp Ripley, to see the museum, to see the facilities that are there, and to look for opportunities to use Camp Ripley, because it is a resource for the people of Minnesota.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, members, if you haven't yet had an opportunity to tour Camp Ripley, I would strongly encourage you to do so. That's a very important asset for Minnesota and the region. And Representative Lemire, thank you, and Colonel Jensen, Mr. Kerr. We will lay this bill over, and we will forward our comments to the Capital Investment Committee that will make the ultimate recommendation on the in the bonding bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
We'll move next. Representative Babler here. I don't believe he's here yet, so we'll move to Representative Woodard. Welcome, Representative Woodard. I will move House File 2003, and I believe we're going to need to send that recommended to pass and sent to Ways and Means.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
So, Representative Woodard, you may proceed.
Mr. Chair, I also have a few amendments that I would like to also have moved.
Okay.
The A1 amendment. The A1 amendment, Mr. Chair and members, is just changing some of the technical language about what a definition of a shutdown is. And this is advice we've got from our colleagues in the Senate as they've worked on this bill as well. So that's the A1 amendment would put that in the correct form.
Okay, members, I will move the A1 amendment. Do you want to speak to that amendment, Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is just a technical change on what an appropriation is and basically helps us define the situation of a shutdown.
Any discussion on that amendment to get the bill in the form that the author requests? Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, just a question. Is this is this amendment to a new section of statute?
This is... thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just the amendment to subdivision 6. It changes subdivision 6. This is not, I guess I would refer to staff to ensure that that doesn't affect any other statute. I don't believe it does because this statute refers to the operations of the Racing Commission and, well, I think that in particular this is just the Racing Commission, but I would refer to staff just to make sure that that is correct.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, this is a different subdivision within the section of law that governs the Racing Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other discussion on the A1 amendment? If not, all in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The A1 amendment is adopted. The second amendment, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second amendment is the A4 amendment, and it, again, takes a section here and ensures that we have the proper language, but it also includes the Gaming Control Board. Right now, the bill, as it was originally written, included the Horse Racing Commission and included the Lottery Commission. This just adds the Gaming Control Board as well, which is the board that operates our poll tabs in the state.
All right, I will move the A4 amendment. Discussion on the A4 amendment. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, same question.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I believe the same answer, but I would refer that to Mr. Shepard as well.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, if I understand the question correctly, it was whether this the A4 amendment amends the same section of statutes as the sections in the original bill, and this one does not. The Gambling Control Board is in a different chapter of law, and so this affects a different agency than the prior amendment did.
Representative Kahn.
This is the A4 amendment that we're looking at?
Yes, we're on the
yes.
A4 amendment.
Okay, I have a problem with taking out one line in it, and that's the on page 3, the deletion on lines 1 and 2. This committee worked very hard many years ago on a totally bipartisan basis, unanimously, to get rid of this receipts in the account being annually appropriated to the board. And we made every account. I think we started with some number that was 90 by the time the special interests came in and yelled and picked at them through the. I think we finally got 70 or something like that special accounts canceled and appropriated by state legislature. So I don't understand. I understand what you're doing in case of a shutdown. Actually, Mr. Chairman, I know there are several members of your caucus. And I have one, actually, that I put in well before the shutdown that would give us a continuing resolution to go on, which isn't terribly unique. Mine is modeled after one that the state of Wisconsin has, and I've put it in for after the first shutdown we had some time ago. But I don't see why we need to, and I would hope that this committee would work on that possibly as a committee bill, and I think we can have lots of testimony about how ridiculous the shutdown was and the amount of expense and the amount of trouble it caused people. Actually, my favorite story of the shutdown was I think the day after Representative Winkler was turned away with his two kids. Because his kids weren't employees, so they couldn't come into the building. I was about to go into the building with my grandkids so I could pick something up. And I was going to, and if they weren't going to let me in, I was going to say, okay, they're here, and you watch them. And by the way, they only speak French. But I figured out a way to get around going in. So, but anyway, I'd like to know why we need, for the shutdown issue, why we need 2.3, the deletion in 2.36 to.
Representative Woodard, and we also have, do you wish to respond?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. What it does is that the lines that are added just replace those lines, and when we say if the major appropriations bill is necessary or not enacted, the board shall continue operations. Understanding from staff on this is that that's necessary to take out the piece before that for this section to make sense. But again, I think I'd refer to Mr. Shepard to confirm that's a correct assumption.
Mr. Shepard and Mr. Barrett is here. We can ask him to come down and speak to this
Well, let me just say what I would like it to say.
Representative Kahn.
The receipts in this account are available for operation up to the amount authorized in biennial appropriations from the legislature. Instead of being directly appropriated to the board, then, if the major appropriation bill isn't enacted, you can have a continuing resolution to keep spending at that point. You could have different language that doesn't totally just give them the money instead of having go through an appropriations process. So,
Representative Kahn, if I understand your suggestion, you're suggesting that the stricken language be retained
Yes, and the
and
added
what about
language
the, what about the appropriated to?
Take that out, too.
Okay, the new language in line 3.1 would be taken out as well?
No, no, I'm sorry. No, you could lose receipts in this account. I'm not sure about that appropriate to the board. Receipts in this account are...
Ms. Roberts,
you put the stricken language in up to the amount appropriate,
just
I think.
To sort of explain to Mr. Chair, members, the Gambling Control Board, like the Racing Commission, are funded through a variety of fees, license fees, but they receive direct appropriations out of the Special Revenue Fund under current law, which means that every 2 years the legislature needs to appropriate that money again. That's different than other fee-based organizations or agencies that have what's called a statutory appropriation, an appropriation that's in statute and doesn't need to be reauthorized every 2 years. You have two different models here in these amendments. In the A1 amendment, which is for the Racing Commission, if you look at on lines 1.18 to 1.21, this amendment is not changing the Racing Commission's direct appropriation to a statutory appropriation. It's simply saying that in the event of a shutdown, there's the amount needed to continue the operations would be appropriated. In the model, in the A4 amendment, and this gets to represent Khan's point for the Gambling Control Board, the amendment on the line she was referring to is actually changing from a direct appropriation to a statutory appropriation. So you have two different models here, and you could make the choice on how you would want to do that.
Mr. Chairman, my suggestion would be to make the... Thank you for explaining what I wanted to say. But my suggestion would be to make the A4 amendment like the A1 amendment. I understand the whole reason for continuing the operation, how ridiculous it is to shut down money-making things, but I think it's a real mistake. You know, the director, even if we just give it, it just means some part of the legislature looks at what's going on in that place. And absolutely, when you have total statutory appropriations, nothing is ever looked at. So if somebody could make the A4 one like the A1 one, I'd...
Mr. Shepard, do you have a suggestion here to this point?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Ms. Roberts and I were just talking, and I think to accomplish what Representative Khan suggested and what Ms. Roberts explained, if you were working from the A4 amendment, you'd basically undo everything that's in that amendment, take out the new language, put back the old language, and then insert at the end of that section the language that's contained in A1, the underscored language. And so how this would read is you'd have in the law governing the Gambling Control Board, it would read the same as the language you just adopted for the Racing Commission, that if a biennium ends without the enactment of an appropriation, then the receipts would be appropriated only until a biennial appropriation is enacted. And I, if the committee wishes to do that, I will write it up correctly, but I don't think it would help for me to try to do it in my handwriting right now if it's understandable to everybody.
Okay, if I understand your suggestion correctly, then in the A4 amendment, we would the existing language on line 236 and 2.3, and I should say in 3.1, and to the legislature period on 3.2 would remain as it currently is. Then the new language on line 3.2 through line 3.4 would be stricken, and the language that's on the A1 amendment starting at the end of line 1.17 through 1.21 would be added. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is exactly correct, and I will put that in one proper form, in the correct form after the meeting is over for Ms. Carpenter and her records.
Okay, I'm going to give Mr. Barrett and Representative Woodard an opportunity to respond to that different language. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn, thank you for bringing that up. I think it is a good point, and it's certainly our intent is what you described. It's not to change any sort of appropriation, so I appreciate you pointing that out. That's fine. I think that works very well. The only point, and I'm sure Mr. Shepherd would identify this, is that we'd have to change the word commission to board to make that work. But other than that, it certainly meets the intent, so I appreciate that.
Mr. Barrett?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I confirm with that decision to support
okay.
that.
Well, then, as the author of the amendment, I will amend the amendment as according to what Mr. Shepherd illustrated. Discussion on that amendment to the amendment. All in favor of the amendment to the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The A4 amendment, as amended, is adopted. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A5 amendment is the last amendment, and this one, again, is based upon discussions after the Government Operations Committee hearing that we had about proper language here. So we on page 1, line 13, we added within the meeting of Article 11, Section 1 of the Minnesota Constitution, and then on page 1, line 15, delete everything after the period, and we say, if the major appropriations bills needed to finance state government are not enacted by the beginning of a fiscal biennium. So again, this is just language that was suggested that helps clarify the bill, and again, I think we're all clear on the intent of the bill, but I do believe this helps clarify it.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, I certainly think the bill is transparent, but the question I have is why are we what reason do we have for adding the reference to Article 11 of the State Constitution on line 1.13? It seems to me appropriated is a pretty standard word, so I don't know why I would have to have a reference to the Constitution there. I don't know that I've seen that before.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, I think this was just to make it as iron-tight as possible on the intent and the meaning. I am not sure whether this is referenced in other bills or other statutes to this extent. And I guess, again, I would ask Mr. Shepherd if that is the case. But this, the intent is to just make it as clear as possible what our intent here is with the bill.
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair and members, I did discuss this briefly with Representative Woodard before the meeting, and I basically feel that this language is not necessary to accomplish the purpose, but it is not harmful either. There was some confusion this summer during the shutdown about it, and so specifying that this meets the constitutional requirement just reinforces the point, but I think it would mean the same thing without it as well.
And Mr. Chair, I also have a testifier that could address this as well, if you'd like to.
Ask me a question. Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, maybe the testifier could help clarify, but otherwise it appears like we're just adding words to the statute for doing so. And, you know, the more hooks you have or the more reach you have in a bill, the more it's subject to manipulation later. So I wonder if there would be a reason for it, and if there isn't a strong reason for it, I think I'll be making a motion to strike that.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe a testifier here should help clarify a little bit.
Okay, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Court Halton, and I represent the thoroughbred industry in the state of Minnesota, and I was the lawyer involved on the horse racing side in the shutdown litigation over this summer. Everything that the members have said thus far, including staff, is accurate. I would hope that you would leave this language in the bill, because despite the fact that you have accurately interpreted the meaning and significance of the language, that's not how it was in court. If you think that an appropriation is an appropriation, go back through the record of the shutdown litigation, and you will find that there was very much confusion about what an appropriation means. We've been through three shutdowns now, and typically, this one was different, but typically the statutory appropriations, the standing appropriations, the commissions that took money in advance from citizens to provide services were not part of the shutdown because they didn't run afoul of Article 11, Section 1, because the spending out of the Treasury for those activities was pursuant to an appropriation. In the district court last summer, that concept was not accepted, and we were shutting down people, agencies that had the money and had appropriated authority based on Article 11, Section 1. And yes, Representative Winkler, I think it's quite clear, and I must have stated it 30 times, and yet we lost thousands and thousands of dollars every day while debating whether an appropriation was an appropriation. So there are times when people say, well, how much clearer can it be? And that is the intent of this language, because my people paid in advance for these services. The state had this money, and you people had written a statute that appropriated this money because that was the purpose. We pay for our own regulation. It doesn't cost the state a nickel. And yet, we couldn't get the appropriated funds, and we had to shut down, and people that came from all across the country were losing thousands of dollars. People got laid off. People lost their jobs. People left, and it was all unnecessary. We went to core function. That's a different argument. Core functions need an exemption from the Constitution. We didn't run afoul of the original provision, and that's why this language is in here, to make it clear that the legislature intends an appropriation to be within the meaning of Article 11.
Well, it's unfortunate that that you have to go to these kinds of lengths to make it clear, but it sounds like Winkler follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Holton, actually the problem with the definition of the word appropriation is the definition that's contained in Article 11, Section 1. It says an appropriation by law that includes all of our appropriations. There are no other kind of appropriations. So I think this language is entirely unnecessary. You know, members, this committee hearing is like an assembly line. We're building the perfect vehicle for a Racino bill or any other kind of gambling bill, because the rest of Article 11 of the Constitution in Section 14 contains a reference to the lottery trust fund, which, of course, you need in order to have the state getting into the gambling business. We added a new reference to Subdivision 6 on 240.15, which requires that revenues be deposited into the general fund and transferred over to the Commissioner of Management and Budget. And now we're adding, and then in the A4, we added the Gambling Control Board. So if the vehicle came in imperfect, we're certainly adding all the parts necessary to make any kind of germaneness argument entirely fall apart later. And so, members, that's the reason why I'm going to move to strike in the, let's see, where are we? On the A5 amendment, I'm going to make a motion to amend the amendment to strike lines 1.2 and 1.3 and request a roll call, because there's no reason to add these words whatsoever unless you want to make sure you get Article 11 of the Constitution referenced so that you can make changes in reference to Article 11, Section 14 of the Constitution in a subsequent amendment to the bill on the floor or in Ways and Means or in whatever locale you want. So this amendment to the amendment is a vote on gambling, and I would ask everyone to vote yes to strike that.
Well, members, I will move the A5 amendment. We have not officially put that on the table. I'll move it, and we have others who wish to speak. Representative Benson?
Well, it was alluded to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. questioning of the change in the language by Representative Winkler. I know that this question has been answered in previous. I just want to make sure that we get it on the record here. Maybe it's appropriate to call it the Trojan horsey or a vehicle bill, but I want your answer to, is this indeed something that we're going to add amendments to later on to expand gambling?
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the question, Representative Benson, and you're correct. We have addressed this in government ops as well. This is absolutely not a vehicle bill for anything other than to ensure that our horse racing tracks and our Minnesota lottery and our gaming board, gaming control board, remain in operation, because they are actually funded by the players themselves, by the participants in that activity themselves, and not by the general fund dollars. That is the only intent of this bill. There is no Trojan horsey here. This is exactly what we say it is.
Representative Benson? Representative Anderson?
I pass.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Woodard, in a follow-up then with Representative Benson's question, if on the floor an amendment is offered to this bill to put Racino on it, will you pull the bill?
Representative Woodard.
Wow. Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl. I think certainly what happens on the floor I cannot predict. The intent of this bill is not to do that. If an amendment was made to do that on the House floor, I probably would not pull the bill. There would be a vote on that amendment. That is not the intent of doing that.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Woodard, I guess I should have been a little more plain. After the fact, if the if an amendment is made for Racino and it goes on the bill, you then have the opportunity to pull the bill, would you, at that point?
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I guess I don't know the answer to that. If it, the that amendment passed as part of this bill, I would argue against the amendment, because I don't. That is not the intent of this bill. But if it was part of that bill, I guess I can't predict what I would do at that stage of the game. And you know, at that point, everybody could vote on that.
Representative Kahn?
Well, unfortunately, I think the author is kind of answering us as to what his intent is likely to be. You listen between the lines. But unfortunately, even if he strongly urged his strong decision to pull the bill, once the bill is out there, it's not in possession of the author, it's in the possession of the House. And I have seen occasions where a bad amendment went on and the author wanted to pull the bill, and pulling the bill is a vote of the House. We kind of think it's just an act of the author, because that's how we usually see it. So I would suggest we follow Representative, since we've already had discussion saying that we don't need the language on 1.2 and 1.3, my intention is to follow Representative Winkler's advice and delete those lines.
Mr. Representative Winkler, to that amendment, actually, you know, I think I may withdraw the amendment to the amendment and put the bill in the author wants, but I will make a motion to table the bill afterwards and consider that to be the vote on whether this committee is on record of sending a vehicle bill to the floor for gambling expansion, including Racino. You know, Representative Woodard and I had a conversation in GovOps in which he said that he would support a motion to re-refer the bill back to the Government Operations Committee if a Racino amendment was adopted on the floor or was offered. And that, I just, it's easy to remember, it was on 12 noon on Valentine's Day that I asked that question. and you agreed, but of course you don't have control over the bill, and if it's the majority will to not re-refer the bill back, then that's not what will happen. So I am going to make I'm going to withdraw my amendment to the amendment, but I will be offering a motion to table, and we'll be requesting a roll call to do that, because members, it's pretty obvious what we're doing, and this is a chance to stop this kind of movement from happening, and I hope we'll get support for it.
Representative Winkler, this bill should not be used as a vehicle. And there are all kinds of possible vehicles every time we have any bill coming people can attempt to use it as a vehicle. As you well know, and as you have practiced yourself along the way, when you were in the majority, this bill should not be used as a vehicle, and that would be my position. Representative Winkler, your suggested amendment was offered before I actually moved the amendment, so you don't need to withdraw the amendment. Representative Downing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, I'm not sure the propriety of this, but if I could ask Representative Winkler a question. I'm curious, why does would your previously contemplated amendment actually preclude an amendment to this bill anywhere along the way? I mean, couldn't the author or anybody else offer any kind of Rossino amendment to any bill moving through? Why would your amendment have actually restricted that from happening?
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, it wouldn't preclude it in the absolute sense, and I should have done it with all the previous amendments probably, but the idea, you know, we get into an argument about whether or not a Rossino amendment is germane on the floor, and if you're referencing sections of the Constitution and so forth, it's just one of the hooks that you need to, you know, it's one little hook, Velcro hook that you need to Velcro Rossino onto this innocuous little pad of felt that we're passing here today. So that's the reason why I was just taking that one little hook out. But thinking about it a little more clearly, I think we're better off not sending the bill at all. And Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, to be clear, I think a much scaled down version of this bill without all the little tentacles to the Gambling Control Board, the lottery, racing, the Constitution, appropriations back to the Treasury, without all those things in there, a version of this bill with a continuing appropriation could go forward, but I think this particular version should not go forward.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I missed this before. Where does this bill go from here?
Representative Erdahl, we've been told that this needs to go to Ways and Means. So you have before you the A5 amendment. All in favor of the A5 amendment,
no,
signify by saying aye.
You didn't.
We didn't have.
Sorry.
Aye. All in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. The A5 amendment is adopted. Representative Woodard, is that it by way of modifications here?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is it. It is now in the format of which I'd like to discuss it.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Woodard, you mentioned that these amendments came forward after the discussion that went into government operations. Who were the ones, individuals, was it testimony, people that came up and testified on the bill, or was it committee members that suggested that these amendments come forward?
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. This actually, all three of them were part of the discussion when we were in government ops. Right. These are brought forward by the Thoroughbred Association, and Mr. Holton testified to that when some of the issues that he saw during the shutdown that would help clarify in the bill what our intent is here. The Senate itself, when it discussed the bill, requested that some of the changes to the that was the A1 amendment, the First Amendment. And then when it came to the Gaming Control Board, that was brought to us by Mr. Barrett, who with the Gaming Control Board, who suggested that this would certainly make sense to have this included, considering they have some of the same issues when it comes to a government shutdown and maintain those operations.
Thank you.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Are you aware of how many other areas of the state sort of run agencies or businesses that shut down, but they would be considered self-sufficient? I mean, I know the Minnesota Zoo is one example, but do you know of others?
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, the Minnesota Zoo is another one that I'm aware of. I'm not overly familiar with other areas that might be the same under the same issues that we're seeing here with these three agencies. But I suppose any agency that is funded through a special revenue account that's done by those who are regulated by fees associated by or paid by those who are regulated would probably also be having some of the same issues during a shutdown.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Actually, the IRRRB would be an example of that, and we run Giants Ridge Golf Resort, Golf and Ski Resort. And even though they basically are self-sufficient in the summer, especially running the golf course, all of our employees at the state agency and at Giants Ridge were laid off during the shutdown. And we had discussed at that time whether or not we should ask that an exception be made similar to the Minnesota Zoo because they rely on their own revenues. In fact, the employees are paid for by local property tax dollars that happen to run through the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and so they were shut down too. We didn't do that because, you know, we wanted to avoid a culture where it would basically become easier to shut down the government. And so that's just something I want you to think about, is that there are other areas of the state that, you know, have a similar situation to this, and we should avoid, you know, giving excuses to us not coming to a budget solution.
Representative Woodard.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Moline. I'm sure that that is a very similar situation. In this particular case, I don't think this makes a shutdown any easier. Shutdowns are painful for the legislature, the governor, and the state of Minnesota, and primarily its residents and citizens. What this bill does is very targeted, though, and says that when it comes to our horse racing tracks and our lottery and our gaming control board, so the pull tabs in particular under the purview of the gaming control board, that they would remain in operation because they are a revenue source for the state as well. They do employ many private sector jobs. You know, if you look at the effect, the shutdown on the horse racing tracks alone, about 1,600 private sector employees were laid off during that two-week period. If you look at the Minnesota Lottery, there was about $10 million in lost revenue to the state as a result of that shutdown, all of which, you know, really didn't make a, the shutdown doesn't make sense in general, but in particular, these don't make sense because they are self-generated and self-funding. So I, you know, I certainly would be interested in hearing a bill on the IRRRB as well.
Members, since there obviously is a continuing discussion on this, I'm going to lay this bill over and bring it back at a later date. We've got two other bills that we need to get through today, and out of deference to those authors, Representative Woodard, I'm going to lay the bill over, and we'll come back to this at a later date.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill on the docket is Representative Abler, House File 2113. He was here.
Yeah, he's right here.
Well, if he's not readily available, Secretary of State Ritchie. Okay.
I'm sorry. I was willing to wait if you guys were all jammed up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably a bill that will make Minnesota great, even into the future. So,
Members, I will move House File 2113, and our intent is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion.
Yeah, you can keep it, or it can go to taxes, whichever you like. We do talk about revenue, so the committee can decide what you want to do about that. So,
is Tax Committee wanting to look at
this? Oh, I don't know, but if I don't need to go there, but I'll think laying it over would be great. So,
okay, well, we can bring it back and send it to taxes if we need.
I don't have a passion for taxes.
For right now, we will intend to lay this over temporarily.
Yeah.
Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is just meant to be I worked on this 2 years ago with Representative Solberg, actually, and we just never got around to it, and then with the fiscal note discussion with the auditor and all that. I've always wondered how they're not dynamic anyway, and this is a way to try to make them more dynamic relative to their private sector about impact on jobs and so on, and that's the idea, just that they would, to the extent they can, without going to any great heroics, just give a nod to what impact it might be in the world beyond here. So, to do that properly, you have to have both the fiscal note side and the revenue estimate side, which is why it has two parts. So that's the bill, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Questions for Representative Abler. Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler, I think this it's a good provision, but I just remember that we recently got the legislative audit on fiscal notes, which probably had, I don't know, maybe 25 recommendations in there about different things we should be doing with fiscal notes. Did you consider adding any of those to your bill?
Those could be friendly amendments, but the reason I'm glad it's in this committee, I would think this would be the committee that would work on that, and part of why I hope you keep it is to just add this to your mix of work that if you do something on fiscal notes. And I don't know where that would happen, but I thought it might be here. So this is my little part, and I'm happy to be part of a bigger discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawy.
Just a comment then for the committee. If the intention is perhaps we might be doing some work on fiscal notes or on legislation, I think we should think about that. I mean, we had that whole report, and often the legislative auditor reports are a source of future legislation. You know, Mr. Chair, I just had a question for you.
Yes.
I noticed, Mr. Chair, you just said that you possibly would be rolling this bill in for inclusion. Are we having an omnibus bill, Mr. Chair?
Representative Slawick, that is a possibility, and I don't expect us to have a major bill like we had last time, but there will be some things that I think we might be best suited to putting it into an omnibus bill. So we want to keep that option open. It all depends on what kind of volume of bills we accumulate, and rather than sending a bunch of bills independently, I think it might make more sense for us to put it together in a state government omnibus bill. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick.
And I asked, of course, Chair Abler the same question and got a similar answer in Health and Human Services. And my only question would be, we'd be adhering then to the third finance deadline of March, is it March 30th for this, because we're a finance committee?
In terms of if it's yes, if we have a state government finance omnibus bill, it would carry to the deadline of March 30th.
Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler, thanks for the bill. I think I have taken an interest in fiscal notes, and I think the whole process could be much improved. I guess my concern is, as I'm reading the narrative of the fiscal note here, there isn't a cost to it, but as I'm looking at page 3 of 5 of the fiscal note, what they're saying, not surprisingly, is they say at the bottom of the, I guess it's the third big paragraph, it says, MMB is unable to determine to this point whether or not the system, meaning the fiscal note tracking system, could accommodate these changes. And then further down, also not surprisingly, they say agencies would only respond to private sector impacts based on information already available to the agency. What I'm seeing is the possibility for them to say, well, we don't have much information, so we can't really comment on this, which you could understand. I think what you're asking for here is legitimate. The only thing I would add, and I don't know whether an amendment's in order at this point or not, is if we're going to ask MMB to make some guesses about private sector impact, then we might also want to have them make some guesses about citizen impact, everyday person impact. And I assume their response would be the same, that they might not know, they could only act on information that is available. To my mind, I mean, when it comes to private sector or even citizen impact, that's why we have lobbyists, I suppose, that if a particular economic sector is harmed or hurt, that's up to an advocate to say so, and they're probably in a much better position than MMB to hazard a guess at that. But I guess my question to you is, would you be open to amendment that just would add the words "and citizen" after the words "private sector"?
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon. The bill's being held over, so maybe we can just chat about that. I think you could add a bunch of things to this, which is why I'm kind of glad you're keeping it. So if there's a fiscal note, I'm kind of glad you're keeping it. So if there's a fiscal note project, then that could be all part of that discussion. I'm trying to focus on the economics in particular, because fiscal notes are economic things. And I think simply adding the word citizen would be a little vague. Even what I've had has been found to be vague, so maybe it needs a little more wordsmithing anyway. But I'm bringing an idea forward, trying to make them a bit more dynamic and in that part. So I appreciate your interest, and I'm happy to work with you.
Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And since you brought up economics, here I am. I wanted to thank Representative Simon for focusing on the particular line here. Let me go further into the line you're amending in the contents of a fiscal note. Reasonably determined to try to avoid an old joke nowadays, what does reasonably determined mean, do you think, in the minds of the folks that would be doing these fiscal notes?
Representative Abler.
I'll have to rely on my law background, Mr. Chair. I said I don't have one. I think reasonable is what reasonable people do when they're being reasonable.
actually, that's about right, isn't it?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Gagnon, my intention, I'm happy to accept help on the words of this, but at this point there is no consideration made at all to the private sector.
Okay.
There's no consideration made toward impact on citizens, as Representative Simon says. There's no consideration made toward work beyond the very silo you're talking about, even if it's one iteration away, which I think is a problem with fiscal notes. And so the reason I said reasonable was so I don't want to have to make them reprogram everything. A paragraph where they at least give a nod to the impact, what they would reasonably expect to be an impact in the private sector, would be a great improvement over total silence mm-hmm. on the topic, and it wouldn't require buying anything new. It would require typing a paragraph after the three of them said, what do you think? And then they would nod their, give their best opinion about that. That's at this point, that's what it's meant to be, and should it go forward in as part of a greater discussion, we'll have much more in detail great. Discussion about fiscal needs.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you, and thank you for the comment as well. I'm not sure what reasonably determined means either, although reasonable people being reasonable sounded pretty good to me. One thing that I'm concerned about in this is that oftentimes we pass many bills and there's interaction between those bills. So someone trying to make a reasonable determination says, well, if this bill passes, then this other bill will have effect one. But if it doesn't have this, if we don't pass this bill, this other bill will have effect two. We don't really know. We don't have a systematic way of evaluating this. This is one of the reasons why, I tried to bring forward the idea of a legislative budget office where we might actually have a rational economic model where you can analyze all of the bills in a different way. Now, the other that's not cheap, and nor is fixing the fiscal note tracking system, which I'm sure you've already heard about and how creaky it is. And when I put my bill in, they said it would cost $1.5 million to replace that system. So one of the things to keep in mind as we consider doing a fiscal note omnibus is there is an old, lousy system working here that needs to get fixed somehow, and it's not the cheapest thing in the world to do, but it might be the right thing to do, and we ought to consider it. Thank you.
Members, as has been noted, one of the reasons, too, for holding this over is that we have only a preliminary fiscal note, which is not adequate enough to send the bill forward. So.
Mr. Chair, that sounds like a reasonable, rational act on the part of a sensible committee.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Representative
Mr. Chair.
Anderson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, the fact that Representative Banyan brought up the cost of his bill, $1.5 million, and yet in this here, they don't even have a cost on here, tells me they have no clue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, that means I'm a better off than Representative Banyan. I wrote it cheaper, so
yes.
Just kidding. That's why I use the word reasonable. He tried to use the word rational, so that just wouldn't work.
Any Thank further you, discussion Chair. On the bill? Anyone else in the audience who wishes to be heard on this bill? If not, thank you, Representative
thank
Abler.
You, Mr. Chair,
we will lay this over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Next, we'll call forward Secretary of State Ritchie. Members, I will move House File 2269, and we intend to lay this over for possible inclusion in our omnibus finance bill. Secretary of State, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Mark Ritchie. I have the honor of serving you as your Secretary of State. I want to make a brief comment, which is the Chairman's suggestion that if you have an opportunity to visit Camp Ripley, please do so. Our agency is negotiating with them for some of our conferences. But on March 9th, our military sister group is taking a bus up for members of the House and Senate to go visit on that day. So there is an opportunity coming up soon if you would like to do that, and I highly recommend it. So thank you again for bringing that up.
Yeah, thanks for that invitation.
Mr. Chairman, the legislation under consideration brings forth the next year's appropriation from our federal Help America Vote funds. Typically, these funds are done in two-year biennium cycles, somewhere between $2 and $3 million, depending on the cycle. Last year, the biennium appropriation was completed in the Senate, but in the course of the summer budget negotiations, only 1 year of those funds was appropriated, and the second-year funds were held back. You have in front of you, I believe, a little one-pager. I would just call your attention to the side with the statistics or with the numbers and language. Essentially, in the last year, the year that we are completing now, $1.24 million was spent on the things that we do based on the HAVA plan submitted many years ago. The focus is the statewide voter registration database, the election night reporting service, the data verification through the matching programs with our Department of Public Safety and all the different agencies. In the next year, the request is for $1.425. In that year, we will have our work for the redistricting, which, of course, started last night or yesterday afternoon with a very heavy focus on helping our counties get all the files reorganized for that redistrict map and the presidential election, which will be our largest election probably in the state's history. So it's a slightly higher amount than in the prior, in last year's appropriation. This this amount will leave somewhere between $300,000 and $400,000 in the HAVA account, depending on how the interest rate has moved. And this points into the future to the need to have a different conversation as the calendar turns about filling this annual need, which has come from the federal government. We don't have to do that now. It's just something that's out there in front. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for bringing this bill forward on our behalf, and we are moving it on the Senate side as well, and I look forward to any questions and answering any of the questions from members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Secretary Ritchie, wondering if you could comment and update us on what you're currently hearing about the future of HAVA funding going forward. What can you tell us about what you're hearing so far?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. They always answer the same no, 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 and our Association of Secretaries of State have heard it enough that that is the assumption that we all make now as Secretaries of State. There has been a minor amount of funding that has come to us on a continuing basis for some of the adjustments to physical plants, township halls, etc., for the purposes of meeting American with Disability Act access, door openers, ramps, that kind of thing. And some of you in your districts, I think, have seen that. But essentially, we now believe that the Congress means that there will be no more HAVA funding. That being said, we've started conversations among the secretaries about their ideas in different states how to handle this, because while this amount of money is very important for our database, the bulk of our HAVA dollars were to put election equipment, especially into smaller, into townships and towns, and so the need to replace those and not expecting any federal dollars to do it is a very big challenge for every state. And so I feel like I'm beginning to get some interesting ideas from other states, but that is a signal to me that we share an assumption that the federal dollars have ended and that we are not likely to see any more.
Questions? Representative Slotwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Ritchie, so you're asking for $1.25 million from this account, and maybe I missed it. How much is in the account right now?
Secretary Ritchie.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Slawick, the request is the second amount, the 1.4, and we think there's 1.7, between 1.7 and 1.8, depending on what the interest rate that has accumulated. So it will leave a balance of around 300,000 to something in that range.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Slawick.
You know, I think this is a really important bill, and I think it's important, you know, with the funds being there, we have a big election coming up, and you're showing what you're going to spend the money for, so I think it's important to move it forward.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we've gone over this a number of times, and I had a chance to chat briefly with the Secretary on the fly two or three days ago. And, you know, a question of mine has always been whether or not the purposes for these expenditures actually fit cleanly under the HAVA law and the HAVA state plan. And I'm looking at these line items, and a few of them, just based on my own personal knowledge of HAVA, clearly do the statewide voter registration system maintenance and management. If there's some kind of a technology upgrade to your statewide voter registration system, that would be one. You know, there's some voter education authorizations. There's polling equipment. But a lot of these, I don't know if I understand enough what the details are underneath them to say that I could support all of this. And again, we continue to raise the broader question of, you know, here is this huge federal infusion of money into the state, and we continue to keep spending it down and not really thinking about the future. And so I'd be a little hesitant to drain this fund almost entirely without some kind of a plan or an idea from the Secretary as how we're going to manage the ongoing expenses that we've committed to through those tens of millions of dollars that we spent. You know, can we just leave all that infrastructure sitting out there and asking the counties or others to pay for them? Are they going to be coming back with literally tens of millions of dollars of budget requests over the upcoming years? I've always wanted to know what is the long-term plan for this, to know what we're signing up for. And this is, we're kind of sealing the deal here. If we drain the fund entirely, we're signing up for some appropriations downstream, and I just don't have a clear sense for, you know, whether that's $1 million or 20 million or, you know, 100,000 or what. So I don't know if the Secretary can offer some comments in response to my comment, but this whole thing is still just way too unclear for me to feel totally comfortable with everything that's on the list here.
Secretary Ritchie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Downey, you raised two particular questions, so let me tackle them one at a time. The first is that it's our experience over the course of years of what is both in the HAVA bill but also what's in our plan. These were taken from the plan. The thing that is new and additional that's different is the proposal coming forth from the Election Integrity Task Force to send a warning letter by way of the Department of Corrections to people in community corrections who are still not yet off their complete probation or in a few instances parole, to make sure that they do not have confusion about whether they have a right to vote or not. And it is part of the HAVA to inform voters about their eligibility or their lack of eligibility. So we believe that does fit under the HAVA appropriating legislation in Washington. It's a relatively small amount in the total budget, but we do believe it comes under the Federal HAVA Act. But to your second question, which is the one that I very much appreciate, we have two different components. One is the annual maintenance of the software, in particular the systems. You know, there's about a $10 million investment in the system. It's been costing about $1 to $1.2 million to maintain that system. That is, it will need to be addressed very directly. How will we do that going forward? The second is the investment made many years ago, before my time, but a very significant investment in the special machines for our voters with disabilities, the AutoMark machines that I'm sure all of you are very aware of. They are first generation. They will last only so long, and they will need to be replaced. And a number of counties are reaching the end of their life in terms of their regular voting machines. And conversations have been moving, I think, in a very good direction among the larger cities and the counties about what their intentions are in their own internal process about how to handle those equipment replacements. We have actually in the audience today the just retired clerk from Bloomington, who was the chair of the elections committee for the Association of the Clerks, and we could ask Tom Ferber to join me and to get his perspective on how the cities who face this responsibility, what they're thinking about. Would that be okay?
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. My name is Tom Ferber. I currently serve on the Governor's Elections Task Force for Integrity, and also am continue to be co-chair of the Minnesota Municipal Clerks and the League of Minnesota Cities Elections Task Force. I'd like to just stress the importance of the leadership and the funding for the Secretary of State's office in regards to maintaining our support of local election officials for not only the standardization of our procedures, but for the training, the clerk's guide, the election judge guides, the forms and signs that are provided. And of course, the state voter registration system has become exceedingly important to local officials who must handle absentee voting. And we have tacked on to that using the absentee module for the from the Secretary of State's state voter registration system. And that's been an important tool for us. So it's very important that we maintain the support for that. As far as the felon notification, I think Representative Benson and Representative Simon are on the Elections Integrity Task Force with me, and we've had a lot of discussions regarding how to notify and to make sure that those that have been convicted of a felony not vote when they're not supposed to vote, but also be aware of when they are, again, eligible to vote after the completion of their sentence. As far as the election equipment, I think there are conversations, I know, in Hennepin County between the county and the cities as funding for equipment as we go forward. We know that our equipment only lasts so long. There's new and better equipment out there. And at a certain point, you do have to replace it. It becomes imperative that we do that and maintain our systems. And I think that we are looking, at least in within a lot of counties, are looking locally to fund that rather than rely on the state, because obviously we know that there's limited funding there also.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Is it your intention that we would pass this bill through today, or is this being laid over as well?
Representative Downey, we're going to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just make a comment. I don't know whether there's a way for us to do this without putting some huge burden on this study group or asking the HAVA Planning Commission to reconvene. But boy, it would be really helpful, I think, for the legislature next year to have a little bit more concrete plan and sense of where this is coming from. We may have plenty of partisan differences, but under-investing in this election infrastructure that we have now put in place through HAVA would be a huge mistake, and I think we just need to have some good information to know how to approach it and begin figuring out, you know, what the state versus local participation and how we'd figure, you know, kind of structure that going forward. But appreciate the comments and the testifier coming down, and just support your work and ask if we can get some more clarity on that, and maybe a line in a bill would help us make sure we get that next year.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think Representative Downey is right about the kind of long term for these funds. Whether or not we've committed ourselves to things over the last few years because of HAVA funds, we know there's going to be between $1 million and $1.5 million hole once the HAVA funds run out. So I agree that we should be thinking about that. And Secretary Ritchie, I don't know what other states have done, whether you care to comment. For example, has there been any dedicated funding source talked about? I know that's never a popular thing, but maybe, you know, something that affects all of us at this table, maybe increase the candidate filing fee. There probably aren't there aren't enough candidates filing for office in Minnesota where a fee would come close, I'd imagine, to $1 million. But I wonder if you or other secretaries of state have given a thought to, once the HAVA funds disappear, what can fill that, and are dedicated funds an option?
Secretary Ritchie.
Chairman Lanning, Representative Simon. Yes, we had a pretty big discussion about this at our recent meeting, our Secretaries of State meeting, and for example, Secretary Hausman from Mississippi, they added a $10 fee on filings for corporate filings, and half of that fee was dedicated to a fund for equipment purchases by the local jurisdictions in Mississippi to replace their equipment. They actually bought touchscreen equipment that hasn't worked for them, and so that's their particular fund. In Arizona, Secretary Bennett has been looking at what are the services that his office provides. For example, they also provide databases and list of businesses on a somewhat commercial basis to people who buy or rent those lists for the purposes of recruiting new business and that kind of thing, putting an additional fee onto those services, which are provided at a very, very modest cost, and having that fund be dedicated for election purposes directly. I think that Hennepin County, if I'm not mistaken, I've asked for a little more information, but they're looking at some bonding opportunities that are available, and a number of the other states have gone to simply bonding on their election equipment to be able to put it, you know, in a more manageable time frame, and then the smaller jurisdictions are making that. But I also know that in a number of states, citizens have themselves directly through vote or through their representatives moved to vote by mail and some of the other less expensive options. Some Western states going to all vote by mail. So there are cost reduction strategies that are alongside of dedicated funding strategies, alongside of bonding and stretch out the cost strategies that other states are looking at or trying or experimenting with. And I really appreciate Representative Downey's comment and your comment, thinking into this future and where we go. I think it comes across other items well, the electronic poll books, which Minnetonka has very successfully experimented with, and things like that. The cost of memory is coming down, the cost of some things are coming down, the cost of software and keeping it going is not coming down necessarily, so making sure that we have a proper balance to keep our infrastructure strong. And I think we're fortunate we have a giant election year this year with relatively good equipment, but we will face some of these end-of-life cycle times on some equipment very soon.
Representative Simon.
Quickly, Mr. Chair, I know that we're about to wrap up, but I just want to say, too, as long as we're all striking a bipartisan note, I do appreciate that on both this year's funds and the ones that you propose to be spent, we have, for this year's, a $10,000 line item for polling place signs to warn felons, and for next year you're proposing $100,000 for warning letters to felons, and that comes out of the work. I know I thank Representative Benson, too, for his leadership on this. I think something we can all agree on, whether or not we support photo ID or we don't, I think we can all agree that it's money well spent to notify people that they're ineligible to vote so that they don't vote and inadvertently commit a felony. So I don't want to drag us into that debate, but I think we can all agree, it's unanimous, that that's a good use of funds because we don't want people voting who aren't eligible. And sometimes it does come down to a sign, people who honestly believe that once they're out of prison but they're still on paper that they can vote. They're mistaken, but they believe that, and they just need to be told. But that's not the case.
Thank you, Secretary Ritchie. And members, if you need any additional information about any of the line items here that they're requesting, please let the Secretary of State's office know that so they can supply that information to you. Members, we need to provide additional funding. That's why I carry the bill, because I recognize that there's a need here. But as we've already discussed, I'm concerned about the next go-around with the federal funds drying up. And if we're going to have to continue providing this kind of level of spending to support our elections, we better know that now in advance and start planning for how we're going to accommodate that as we deal with next year's budget, next biennial budget. So we will lay this bill over for possible inclusion. Members, tomorrow we have two bills up. The Beard bill is not getting to us because it hasn't finished in GovOps. So we'll take that up when we get it from GovOps. Meeting adjourned.